I want to introduce the brilliant, the world champion, Judah Friedlander, tonight, everybody. Please welcome Judah.
Wow. Thank you. Thanks for having me here. This is really cool to be here.
Can you, in 4 minutes, give us a summary of your life and how you ended up right here, right now?
Okay. Okay. Creative. Mom, I mentioned this in my book quickly. My mom always did a lot of art.
Where?
Just at home. You know,
yeah, but where?
This is in San Diego.
Okay.
A little kid, lived in San Diego for a while. Born in Maryland, lived in San Diego for a while. Mom always did lots of art. Very strict parents. She wouldn't let us watch much TV. It was, you know, first was get your homework done, and then it was either go outside and play or create something, make something, do some art, drawing, whatever. And my dad kind of always taught me to sort of like question authority, you know, don't always believe what you hear and see on TV and et cetera. You know, so those two things were big. And then completely miserable in school for the most part. Absolutely hated it. I always looked at it. I got good grades. I had to. I think I would have been, you know, killed by my parents if I didn't. But so I always looked at school like prison. It's like do good behavior and then get the fuck out. That's how I kind of viewed it. And
you went to a good school.
It was a public school.
No, but you went to a good college afterwards. You went to NYU.
I did. I kind of forget that I ever went there because I didn't view it as a good college when I was there. I went to film school at NYU and I started in 87. And I kind of view that, I don't really even view it as a college experience. So I basically had a high school education. But because in film school, there's not too much you can teach. You basically, you get a camera, you go out and make a short film and then you edit it and you just learn by doing. You don't really learn that much. So, but the school got me to New York. But backtracking a little bit. I was always kind of a loner as a kid, and I think I still am. You know, I wish I wasn't, but I think that's just the way it is. So I always did lots of art as a kid, and I was always interested in comedy, and some of my early cartoons had, you know, comedy or comedy attempts in them. And then when I was 16, I found out you could do stand-up comedy. I never knew you could do it. You'd see like Steve Martin, Joan Rivers on some late-night talk show. It never occurred that you could do that. And then I happened upon this. In 1985, we got a VCR, and I wasn't allowed to stay up late. But I learned to program the VCR, and then I would tape this show that came on real late at night. And it showed comedians that you'd never heard of. And this is all on this is non-cable TV. This is just syndicated stuff. And they would talk about comedy clubs, and that's when I first realized, oh, you can do that. I'm like, I want to do that. So I started writing jokes at 16, but I was very introverted and shy. And then when I was 19, I made 19 the deadline. It's like I got to get on stage before I'm 20. You know, at the time, I viewed 20 as this ancient kind of age. So when I was 19, I did my first open mic. And then the first 2 years I did it, I didn't even know that you're supposed to go out every night. I thought the guys you saw in Letterman or Carson had done it like 10 times before, and Johnny Carson would walk into some comedy club with some hot chicks and, you know, trying to be cool. Then he'd he would actually say to one of the hot chicks, I'm going to give this kid a break. You know, that would make him look like a good guy, and that would make the girls think he's cool. That's actually how I thought showbiz worked. And then I think when I was about 21, 22, I realized, oh, you're supposed to go out and do this every night. And then I didn't pursue acting for years. And then after about 7, 8 years of doing stand-up, I was finally able to get a commercial agent. My first professional acting jobs were doing commercials. And then I started getting tons of commercials. And that's like basically like making a short movie a day and learning stuff. And then I got little bits in TV shows.
I love it that so many corporations were like, this is our man.
Oh, initially they weren't. You know, I actually got my agent. At the time, I was doing all the clubs in New York City, but they all pay like nothing to like, you know, $50 tops for a show. And so I still had a day job. I was front desk person at Crunch Fitness.
Nice.
And they actually named me front desk person of the year of all the Crunches.
Oh my God, I love this.
And then when the Crunch in LA opened, the CEO of Crunch came to me and he says, Judah, we're opening up a gym in LA and we want to fly you out there so that you can work the front desk and the other staff can just watch you do what you do. That's like a direct quote.
That's amazing.
And the GM that I would have to be working under was like horrendous. And I knew I'd be working like 14 hours a day, and I'm like, I don't want to do that. So I turned it down, and they were shocked. And so anyways, a lady, and I was never able to get an agent. Anytime I met an agent or something, they would look at me and they would just be like, there's no way you're ever going to cast anything. Your hair's too long. You got big sideburns. You got big glasses. They're like, you're too extreme looking. No one will ever want to use you. And then this one lady who worked out at the gym, I was just helping her move some weights once, and I don't know, I was making her laugh, and she says, you should do commercials. And I said, I'd love to. I go, but I don't, and I have comic friends who do it, but, you know, I've never had a lead in. And she goes, well, I used to own my own agency. She goes, I'll recommend you to the guy who runs it now. And this was Paradigm at the time. And this guy, Doug Keston, who was the head of it. So I got a meeting with him, went well, never heard. No, I heard from him once. Didn't get a call back, and then I didn't hear from him for like 6 months. So I go to her after 6 months. I go, yeah, I haven't heard from him in 6 months. So I'm like, I don't know, maybe there's just nothing out there. She's like, no, call him, bug him, call him. I did, and then I got an audition. The next one, I booked it, and the next one after that, I booked it. Yeah, so I just started getting.
You know, the amazing story about this is that so many people, especially the stand-ups that I know, sort of get into the world of comedy because they're attracted to sort of the benefit program of, like, whether it's girls or lifestyle, but also the need to make people laugh, yeah. Or the desire, I shouldn't say need, but in lots of actors and lots of people in the entertainment business, sort of they want the acceptance from a larger idea.
But
you, I know, that's what I was about to say.
It was just really combat misery for the most part.
But your story,
trying to not be suicidal and just combat misery.
But you were, it's really unique that you were like, okay, I have all these interests, animation, like artistry, like you had a very, and you look at somebody like, you know, whatever, the Johnny Carson, whatever, like that whole thing, and you didn't necessarily desire the lifestyle.
No, never did.
You wanted the process.
Yeah. And that's even like, before the podcast started, I was talking a little bit about like where I live, and it's like I was saying to Sim how it's like, yeah, I live in New York, but I don't really know where I want to live. It's like every time I look to buy a place, it stresses me out and depresses me too much with how little you get for how much you spend.
Yeah.
It's basically like a two-bedroom apartment in Greenwich Village is about the same as a 2,500-square-foot house in the Hollywood Hills with a swimming pool and a view of the Hollywood.
Well, luckily with the paycheck you're receiving from doing this podcast.
Yeah, no,
you're well on your way.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry.
But it's like New York can be a real grind to live in. I think it's harder to live in now than it's ever lived in. Like, crime is way down, but just living in it is difficult, much more difficult than it used to be. You know, just with the just congestion and just everything, you know. But I don't know. For comedy, it is good. There's a lot of stage time there. So for what I do, it's good.
I can relate to your story a bit. Chris and I talk a lot. My husband, Chris Pratt, we talk a lot about how we are, although I think we like the lifestyle more than we want to admit. But
that's okay. There's nothing wrong with a good lifestyle.
But every
time I come to L.A., I'm like, what am I doing? I should fucking move back here. It's so much nicer. What the hell am I doing living in New York? It sucks. You know? I think that every time.
But there's a surprising amount of people in our industry that don't seem to love the actual artistry of it. Mm-hmm. They want the things and the benefit
program. Are you talking actors
program.
Mostly, or writers, or crew people,
actors. I feel like I'm really fortunate to be with somebody who loves acting as much as I do.
Yeah, well, it shows. You know, I mean, and you guys are great.
Thanks.
I mean, I remember when you hosted SNL. I was filming 30 Rock at the time, and Lutz, John Lutz, who played Lutz on 30 Rock, he at the time he was. acting on 30 Rock in a recurring role and still being a staff writer on SNL. And we were talking about you one day and when you were hosting SNL. I think it was, I don't know, it was probably like 6 years ago maybe. I don't know.
Well, you did it twice.
Maybe it was when President Obama was running and Tina Fey came and guested.
But anyways, we were talking about you, and I was like, I think it's Monday or something. I'm like, hey, who's hosting this week? You know, just making conversations. It's like Anna Faris. I'm like, oh, dude, she's gonna be awesome.
Oh my god, that's so nice.
And then later in the week we're talking, and he's like, if she wasn't hosting, she could be a cast member. You know, I'm like,
oh my god,
easily.
You're, you're giving me such a gift. Yeah.
I think it's true. I mean, one thing that's really cool about you is that you can do a lot of things because like you're naturally funny and you can do comedy, but you can because you're a natural actor also you can do drama too. So and you can do lots of different characters. That's pretty rare.
Thank you.
It's also hard in Hollywood because Hollywood's always trying to, the business is typecasting. That's how they work pretty much, and most people view people as they can only do one thing. So, people who are, if you're not white and especially or even black, if you're Asian, if you're Latino, if you're Arab, it's even harder. But everyone gets typecasted.
Don't you remember that? How revolutionary it was! I'm totally getting. Sim's going to get annoyed with me because we were supposed to get some callers.
No,
but how revolutionary the casting of Pulp Fiction was! Like the idea at that time of John Travolta and like Samuel L. Jackson. Like it was. I remember feeling floored. This is before I even thought about coming here or whatever, and thought that maybe I could make a living doing something I loved. But the idea of the vision of breaking away from
a guy who was considered a has-been, Travolta, and then someone like Sam Jackson, who, black guy and not a leading guy
and, like,
by any means.
And slinky, tall Uma Thurman, and just how – why did that – it's a shame that it felt so brave and revolutionary.
It shouldn't, right.
Right.
Yeah.
At that time, I feel like that was just when – independent films are really just hitting their stride. You're talking about Steven Soderbergh and Sex, Lies, and Videotape. And
independent films that really broke through
into the mainstream. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that was a time where, when Quentin said, this is my cast, and Harvey Weinstein said, okay, but they still needed that one linchpin actor. They got Bruce Willis,
right.
And that kind of triggered the financing.
Oh, really?
That's right. Yeah. What about the beautiful, the woman who played his girlfriend in that? Oh, sorry, I'm still on Pulp Fiction.
That's where I am too.
Oh, okay, sorry. The beautiful, and she talks about the pot belly. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm remembering that scene.
The Roseanne Arquette?
Bruce Willis's.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
His love. And it was just a.
I don't remember her
such
name.
An unusual casting choice because we're so used to some kind of sexy bombshell. Right. And she was sexy in this very soft, sensual, unusual way, and he loved her. And it was, I want to sit here with my blonde hair extensions.
No, but it's interesting. When I told some people that I was doing your podcast, it shows you how so many people think they always compartmentalize people. Like they can do one thing and that's it. Like when I told people I was doing your podcast, some people were like, she's doing a podcast? And they were shocked and surprised. It's like, yeah, she's allowed to do a podcast. And it's totally cool. It's like you can do more than one thing.
Right.
You don't have – it's weird because people complain that, he always plays the same character. And then you play something different. They're like, why is he doing that? So a lot of times people – it's like they want the diversity of a performer, and then they also want the performer to do the same thing over and over again.
Right? Yeah.
So it's kind of like when you go to a concert and they only play the hits. And you're like, they didn't play any new stuff. And then if they only play new stuff, they're like, they didn't play any hits.
Mix it up.
You're a performer. You're an artist. You can do whatever you want.
I like the track you're on because it's Blame the Audience.
Cool.
Yeah. No. But I know what you're saying. It's sort of Yeah, I love the idea of being able to grow and stretch and like play different things. But as we've talked about in previous podcasts, my big haunting factor is my mom, because I feel so guilty if I stray from a character who's not very morally, mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you have those issues too?
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
No, I don't, actually. I don't think I do. Yeah.
Even though you're – why was your mom so strict about television?
I think she thought most of it was crap, you know, and also things were different back then. Like people would actually say to their kids, don't sit too close to the television. Like people thought that was bad for you. And now everyone's, you know, holding up screens to their face right. Like 2 inches away. So I don't know. I think they just viewed that as like not –
Because my mom did too. Yeah. She wouldn't let us watch television.
Yeah.
And if she ran to the grocery store, my brother and I would like we would watch television, and then we would put like a bag of peas, frozen peas, on top of it.
Oh, really?
Because she would come home. The first thing she did, she would feel if the television was warm.
Oh.
Yeah, that was back when we had like box television.
Yeah, yeah. That's a cool story.
So
I love that.
Interesting.
I love that.
Oh. Man,
see,
I
don't think I was ever smart enough to even think of that. But I wouldn't. I was so petrified of my mom, I wouldn't even think of trying to do something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but that's brilliant.
She had always had my number.
Yeah,
she always knew what was going on.
Did you hear the last podcast, the one we had with Regina Hall?
No, I haven't heard.
There
that
was a call with
I call my mom
in the beginning of the podcast where. Anna's mom wondered why Anna can't be funny without being raunchy.
Oh, okay.
It was a very, very interesting call, and it was hilarious because that podcast, especially the beginning of the podcast, was extremely raunchy. Regina Hall was teaching Anna how to properly administer a blowjob, and
administer. I'm going to administer a blowjob to you, honey.
I don't think I've ever used that.
If I was doing something like that, yeah, I'd probably get shit from my mom, too. I probably would. But
it's different for girls,
women. But I don't do that much. I'm not, like, casting something sexual that much. And even in my stand-up act, I'm not doing sexual stuff that much. So,
right.
But I bet I would get a little bit on that. And
well, sometimes I think my mom views it as sort of like an easy maneuver way, like an easy device. But what I want her to understand is that I just want to be honest.
Yeah.
I really want to know how to give a decent blowjob.
Yeah.
Mom.
Was this in a particular scene that you did that happened?
No, just this is real life.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah.
And you were talking to her about that.
Well, I didn't talk to her about that.
You're talking on the show about it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think I think having those conversations is good, you know, and you need to talk to doing it with, because how are you supposed to know? You know, it's just like with girls. It's like there's so many things, you know. I mean, you know, guys are constantly studying women, but it's, you know, always, you know, somewhat from a distance, you know.
Sure.
You're usually not getting – information directly from the source. It's all observatory.
Absolutely.
You know? So, yeah, if someone just tells you something, that's fantastic.
Well, we've talked a lot about, like, and I'm sure you, like, everyone here at my dining room table is too educated, I would think, to maybe believe that, like, for instance, I was having this conversation at work that there was a fella that was inquiring about, like, a fist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does a fist like
fisting.
Yeah, well he was talking about his wife is about to give birth,
mm-hmm.
and the doctor had to put the hand up there, and he was saying like, "Well, honey, you know, you got one for free." And I know that he was, of course, joking, but at the same time, it did make me think about, like, sort of the larger idea that with the porn culture right now, see, Mom, I'm so sorry, I just keep going here, but that there's this, I don't think, from the polling I've done,
extensive
polling. I'm loving this. I'm listening.
Actually, you know, that doesn't, it's not going to feel as good as some of those ladies on the porn make it sound like.
The fish
one. Well, yeah, or I mean, I've never aggressive done that. Hands yeah. in general.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I've watched porn from many different countries, not uh-huh. many, but several different countries, let's yeah. say, maybe four or five different countries. I don't like American porn.
Oh, interesting. This yeah. is like sociological. Yeah. So, okay, yeah. so
I don't.
Right.
It's like, I mean, literally, like every American porn I've seen, there's a couple things I just don't like.
Like what?
Well, first of all, both the man and the woman are so aggressive. It's like they're both just yelling at each other the whole time.
I don't, right.
I'm like, I've never had sex like that. I don't want to have sex like that. And then also, they're both so self-indulgent. You know, the guy's like, yeah, yeah, you like that, you like that. And the girl's like, yeah, yeah, you like that, you like that. And I'm like, everyone's so self-centered. And then they're always just yelling at the other person. I'm like, I remember when I first saw it, I mean, remember it like scared me. I'm like, oh,
so what's the international porn that's more demure and generous?
You know, I don't know. I've
what
seen
country?
Polish porn. I've seen
and
Japanese
wait,
porn.
Polish
can you
porn
the
is
differences
is
between the international.
Yeah,
yeah it's more
Polish.
Like if you watch like
do you
Japanese
think it's a,
porn,
sort of a communist influence? Like
no, I don't know. I think it's just. I don't know. That's an interesting question. I don't know. I mean, but one thing, like when I've traveled, I started doing stand up a lot in Europe. I started going to Europe a couple times a year to do stand up about 4 years ago, and that really kind of opened up my eyes. You know how when you're in a bad relationship, you can't see it, but all your friends can
yes.
see it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then like 3 years later, you're out of it and you're finally over it. And you're like, what the fuck was I thinking?
Yes.
So. When I started doing shows like in England and like Netherlands and Sweden, I initially thought, oh, I'm going to go here and learn about these countries. But what really happened was I started learning more about my own country. I was like, I was able to get some distance and see it. And you know, because you're so used to, no matter where you are in life, you're so caught up in it. It's hard to see,
you're like,
get perspective.
Why aren't Pringles quite as popular in America?
Yeah, but it's like, but so many things. Like in Sweden, like when you walk down steps outside, right near, there's like, let's say there's steps, and then in the middle there's like a railing. Right next to the railing on the ground, the steps are smooth. So it's like for 6 inches, it's like a ramp. And I was like, why is this? And I talked to somebody, they're like, oh, that's so, when you have your bicycle, you don't have to carry it down the steps. You can just glide it right down the steps. I'm like, simple. Like,
makes
like,
sense.
Like a very simple thing that we don't have here.
Right.
Yet there's nothing technological about it. It's just someone thought to do that, you know. And then also when you're at the grocery store in Sweden, you know when you're in the grocery store and you know your groceries go through, you're paying for it, but you've already paid for it, but you haven't finished packing up your bags yet, and now all the other stuff is coming in, and you're afraid you might grab some of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
They have this like bar system so that it automatically at the end separates things, so that yours is already separated from the incoming stuff coming in, so you don't
wow.
have to like grab it quick.
Because
like,
I got to tell
just
you,
simple like that.
Yeah. You know, I yeah. always view the bar. Like yeah. when you're
the plastic bar,
as that's an aggressive that's, move.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
I yeah. do. Like yeah. I view it as like we are now distancing ourselves.
Yeah.
And I hate it. Yeah. So I try to avoid doing
yeah.
it.
It's like we were never friends, but now I really don't. Like
right.
It. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know why. I never liked putting that yeah. bar up, and. I don't know. Do you guys feel the same way? Yeah. It feels uncomfortable.
It does. But do you ever judge people from what they put on their side of the conveyor belt when you have that? Like, they have a few things. Do you ever, like, look at
I look at them, but I don't judge. I analyze, but I don't
analyze.
Judge.
Analyze. I wouldn't yeah. say judge. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm just saying analyze and kind of just try to figure out their lives just yeah. based on what they're taking home.
Like, what do you mean? Like, what?
Like, for example, like,
I'll be like, wow, this person actually knows how to cook. I bought pre-made things.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'll take yeah. home, like, you know, a six-pack of Heineken and two frozen CPK pizzas, and, you know, and they'll look at me and they're like, okay, this guy's probably single, you know?
Yeah.
Probably,
yeah.
And then you know you can do the same thing by looking at to see whatever.
Right,
I mean,
I don't.
I always kind of felt self. That's why I feel self conscious
yeah.
at grocery stores. I yeah. really don't like people kind of analyzing.
How did we get on this tangent? I started talking about going to Europe.
Oh, we were talking. Well, we were talking about porn in different countries.
Porn, yeah, porn in different countries. Right.
It all comes back to porn.
We went right from porn to what's Chinese porn like compared to American porn?
I don't think they have porn in China.
They probably do not. Yes.
Japan, there's a lot, and they are like I mean, they have some really weird, bizarre stuff. I don't like that stuff. The stuff I see, it's just people having sex, and it looks like they both like each other and care about each other. So
that's the stuff that you like.
Yeah. But in American porn, you can't.
See, that seems
find
very
that.
Healthy.
You don't think that
with like all of the websites, you know, with all of these clips, and there are tons of websites that show porn. I mean, you can there's a porn to fit everyone's appetite. Don't you think? Like, if you want massage porn, if you want babysitter porn, if you want, like, you know, doctor. Listen, I don't watch porn, but I'm just like I've from.
Can we try to combine the two weirdest professions for porn? Like right now, I'm going to like the most bizarre. Let's combine a female and a male. It doesn't have to be female. I don't mean to be like.
Well, the majority of the population is heterosexual, so that's why you said
okay. Yeah, I don't know why like an underground parking attendant comes to mind with somebody. Give me something.
Okay, here's underground parking. Underground parking attendant. A woman pulls in to pay her thing, but she has no cash, she lost a ticket. And they won't let her exit the parking. And the attendant.
Yeah, but what does she do for a living? I like where you're going, but what does she do for a living? I need to know why
she
is she.
Owns Uber.
Why is she
owns Uber?
Or does she drive an Uber? Or she?
No, she owns Uber.
She owns.
She
Uber.
Bought it from the guy who owns it currently, and she's the new owner of Uber.
But what was she doing in the garage?
Well, she was parking. She
had a doctor's appointment? Like what?
Maybe
what was
a doctor's appointment, and the doctor maybe didn't validate the ticket. And so the attendant wouldn't
she's
let
pissed.
Her.
She's pissed. She owns Uber. She's fucking pissed.
Yeah. Right. But the attendant won't let her out unless she performs sexual favors.
And Uber is not allowed to pick people up at that garage.
There you go. It's like LAX.
And she really doesn't want to take another elevator. She's scared of elevators.
Yeah.
She does not want to go back up to get it validated.
Right.
Because she almost had a nervous breakdown on the way down.
Absolutely.
And she normally would take the stairs, but she sprained her ankle 2 weeks ago. That'd be cool.
All right, guys, we did. You know what? We'll finesse this a little more, but we got it. All right, so let's take a caller.
All right, let's do it.
Hello,
Jared.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Sim, and you're on Anna Faris is Unqualified. You're on with Anna and Judah Friedlander. How are you?
Hi, Jared.
Hello, everyone. How
What's
are
up,
you?
Jared?
I'm great. Hey, thank you for submitting a question and agreeing to be on here.
Thanks for having me.
Oh my God, we're so grateful. We were just having a conversation that would make my mom unbelievably uncomfortable. So hopefully we can continue that.
So Jared, it sounds like it's been 2 years since you've been in a relationship with someone who emotionally abused you, and now you're having confidence issues because of her. I mean, I think you should walk us through what's going on right now, because I really have a good feeling that Judah and Anna are going to help you with this. So tell us what's happening.
Okay. It's been like about 2.5 years since my last relationship, and it was a very fast relationship. It was like 4 or 5 months of like really intense, all in, just like full blown. We're here and like, you know, see each other every day, every night, whatever. And then it was, you know, probably about 2 weeks into it, it started to get really bizarre. And the more the girl sort of showed me her true colors, the stronger, I don't know, for some reason, I just decided I wanted to stay with her because it was easier to be with her than to break up with her. And, you know, sort of the flip side became, you know, her freaking out, and I didn't want that. And when we broke up, since then, for some reason, I think like just it was so damaging to me that I've been having a hard time figuring out how to sort of like open up the vault of my, you know, either physically or socially. Yeah, it's been really difficult for some reason.
I'm so sorry.
Can I ask what you said? You were emotionally abused?
Yeah, just like, you know, sort of one of these people that are very manipulative, you know, sort of like making bizarre demands, like in the middle of the day. Like, for example, like, hey, can you go check on my cats at my house? I think that it's too hot. And I'm like, I'm working. Yeah, but you need to go check on my cat. Like, just weird little mind games, like, sort of, like, getting me to do these chores and then always being upset if I couldn't come to the phone.
Making you feel guilty, like you're a bad person?
Yeah, exactly.
Did she ever name call or anything?
Yeah, it was just sort of, it was more of like, there was this tone to how she would talk to me that was pretty strange and freaky after a while. And anyhow, you know, after we ended it, I actually felt like I just like couldn't get my mojo back. You know what I mean? I know it sounds ridiculous, but well, I just like couldn't, I don't know, I just couldn't like figure it out. And I've been on one date.
Do you still like the ex?
No, okay. Definitely not.
Do you think you have trust issues with women?
Yes.
Okay.
I think it's safe to say that.
Do you think you have low self-esteem? Yeah.
But
I mean, when you were with the woman and she was doing things that made you feel bad, yet you'd stay with her, do you think that's, looking back, do you think that's esteem issues? Do you think you still have esteem issues? I've certainly had that. I've been in a, you know.
I think so, yeah.
But do, okay.
I think it's just one of those things that's hard to, it's hard to break out of, and every time I imagine myself with someone else, I keep going like, do they look like her? Do they think, it's, I don't know, it's this weird thing I keep comparing, and I don't want to do
you're,
that.
You're, it sounds like you're afraid difficult. Of getting burned again. That's why you're comparing them to her, because it sounds like you don't like her anymore, but you're afraid of
right.
getting burned by someone again. So you're like, well, if they're like her, if these characteristics are like her, then maybe I'll get burned again. Is that what you're thinking?
Well,
or,
yeah. You know, but also, and Jared, like, do you think that you felt like, what is wrong with me that I was attracted to this person? Like, what is wrong with, like, how did I, because I've been in those kinds of relationships where it's like, oh my God, why, like, everyone else was seeing something that I didn't see. I craved acceptance from this person that was so, like, atrocious. Why did I do that? And then you start to question your judgment with everything.
100%. I mean, I think that, you know, it's funny, after the breakup, a lot of my friends sort of came out of the woodwork and were like, yeah, you were kind of like lost to the island for about 4 or 5 months.
You were telling the story of, first of all, everyone around this dining room table, but also I would like to think every normal, healthy person, where it's like you want to believe something, you want to believe the best in somebody, you want to believe that your judgment is correct, you also have enough pride that you're like, don't you tell me what's wrong, I got this, and
right.
And then when sort of when things fail, it's all a combination of all these crumbling things, like a loss of pride, you being frustrated with your friends, like, why didn't you tell me?
Yeah, I think you should rip on your friends for not telling you.
But at the same time, maybe he wouldn't have listened.
That's kind of a shitty thing for me to do, but at the same time, it's like, I already feel so shitty.
No.
I can't put the blame on someone else for like 5 minutes.
You wouldn't have listened. So listen, we're going to need her name, number, and address, and we're just going to send...
Yeah, I want to call her. She sounds great.
I'll give her her social security number.
We're going to give her the what for. But Jared, I think it shows actually kind of an awesome quality in you that you called, you're open, you're talking about stuff that I think a lot of guys and girls wouldn't ever talk about.
What's her name, Karen, by any chance?
Her name is Karen Sharon.
Okay. Okay. So you're still having trouble starting a relationship is what you're saying, right?
I mean, I did try, admittedly, a Tinder date a couple of weeks ago just to see how it would go. and she was like super nice and
Jared, I do not mean to interrupt you, but are you turned off by girls that are nice to you?
Sort of freaks me out when I'm going like, oh, this person seems really nice, because then I immediately go like, wow, I could probably see myself dating this person.
Like, why is this person like me?
I think I'm just scared of the possibility that I will open myself up to somebody in a very genuine and real way, and then they'll be really sweet and amazing, and then they'll show me their true colors, and it won't be that great.
Yeah. I think that's okay, though. I mean not a good
thing,
but I think that's the better way to go. It's like to be open.
Oh, for sure.
But you know, you got through this one, this last one. You know, you survived it, and you're gonna do if it happens again, and it may not even happen again. But you know, the next person you go out with might seem nice at first, and it turns out that's really who they are. So
The challenge will be accepting a nice person.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Right. And then also, if the person is nice at first, and then 6 months later you start noticing things that are not good about that person, and I think what you have to do is, as soon as that happens, not the next day or whatever, address it. Or if you don't feel confident enough to address it that day, address it the next day or the next week. And then if that stuff happens again, you know the deal, and then you know it's time to get out and realize it's not – that it's, you know, someone treating you bad is not your fault. It's not in your power. But you can leave, you know.
I guess, Jared, I just don't want you to reject somebody who is nice to you because it somehow feels like you're not that this person, because you're used to like the atrociousness of the last one.
Right. It's like I'm generalizing a gender and just saying, like, if this one was bad, they all must be bad.
Well,
which I know isn't true, but, like, obviously that's not the case. It's like flipping the switch. Like, the switch is so heavy. And once I do it, and I, you know, maybe go on a couple of dates, maybe it'll start feeling like, okay, like, there are definitely some decent people here, but it's just, that's the hardest part.
I know. I just don't want you to reject them because they are nice.
Yeah.
And when you're used to the pattern of, like, this girl being, like, incredibly demanding, incredibly needy, making you feel bad, and you're used to that.
I've definitely done that before, what you just said. You know, been burned
before. I've done that to you.
You know, okay. And then, you know, you're like, and then you, years later, you look back, you're like, wow, I shut some really cool people out of my life.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, for sure.
I got to tell you, though, the positive thing, Jared, hearing this is that after these experiences, in my experience at least, when you're dating people that are wrong for you, that make you feel like an insane person or somebody who, like, you're just not yourself and you really question a lot of things in your life, then when the timing is right and you meet somebody who makes you feel really happy, who's popular, who's kind, who's smart and is grounded and is generous, then at least if you hadn't had the rough experiences, you might not be able to recognize that. So
yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, you're right.
Hey, Jared, it's Sim talking right now. You're 28
hey,
right
Sim.
Now. I'm 38. I gotta tell you, your story really kind of I kind of relate to that story a lot.
Oh really?
It's happened to me a few times.
Oh my God, has it ever? I've been there.
I've
witnessed them.
I've known Anna for 15 years. She's been one of my best friends for 15 plus years. So she's seen me through everything. But I gotta tell you,
and we both dated people that made us feel bad.
Absolutely. That's true. They make you feel really small, and then you kind of wonder,
right.
like, am I doing something wrong? And do I want right. to put myself out there again and go through the same thing? And I'll tell you right now, you know, I've been through a divorce, as has Anna. I made it out. I'm dating someone wonderful right now. I know it's taken a while. I mean, not really, though. I'm 38, but at the same time, I've never been happier. But I will say
That's
this,
amazing.
Though. I will say this, though. I mean, yes, there's always going to be a light at the end of the tunnel, but during this time, your friends are really, really important because they're the ones that'll tell you, it's like, listen, it's not you. We know you're an awesome guy, and we know that you're going to be fantastic. Just be true to yourself. Be confident. Live your life the way you live your life, and just be yourself, and trust me, mm-hmm. something great will happen to you.
Right. Jared, I have to use the restroom, but I do want to tell you that I want you to be in touch, and I really like you. And I think that because your honesty and openness, you're gonna have a great life. You're gonna have.
Oh, thank you.
And
that,
I think what you said there is really key. The honesty and openness.
Yeah, right.
And
like
Jared,
not that many men are like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and also Jared, that goes for not just when things are going well. That goes for when things are going bad. So when
right.
if someone ever treats you bad in the future, whether it's a relationship or not, and I'm sure it'll happen because there are bad people out there, you have
sure.
to either walk away immediately mm-hmm. or confront them with it immediately and then likely walk away too. But the fact that you
right.
know, you've had it happen to you now, so try to learn from it and be able to recognize that kind of behavior. That
Jared, can we call you again?
Absolutely.
I would love
That'll
that.
Be so fun.
You've
That'd
been
be great.
You've
yeah,
been
I'll
just
keep,
awesome.
I'll keep you updated on my.
I mean,
hopefully I can work on being more confrontational in a positive, constructive way. I think that's an issue that I need to work out.
Well, and I just don't want you to reject really kind girls because you're used to really mean people. You know,
right. yeah,
you'll see the signs
yeah.
earlier now. I'm pretty sure that you know,
yeah.
you'll see them and then you'll recognize them and you'll know what to do.
Well, that's really great. Thank you guys for the great advice. Seriously,
hey,
really,
Jared,
that means a lot that you guys took the call.
Oh my God, thank you for being so open and honest, and we love you. And really, we're going to be in touch. LA is such an interesting city to embrace because we don't have much reason to defend ourselves
mm-hmm.
because life is pretty good here. It's about 76 degrees. Sure, we're in a drought, but we can always get more water from someplace else.
Right, right.
Like,
I remember when I moved here, and I lived here in like the early 2000s for a couple of years, and I remember like, I was like, how does anyone do comedy here? There's no need for it. It's just nice. It's like, where do you get your comedic inspiration from? Like, I understand, like, you know, like tough areas or shitty areas or like you need a sense of humor to survive. It's like, LA, I don't know that you do, you know, but there are, you know, obviously plenty of things, but.
Sure. But when you go to like New York or Seattle, or San Francisco or whatever, there's like mentioning that you're from LA invites such sudden aggression, and you're like, I don't know, man. I guess you got a problem? I'm cool with your city. Why aren't you?
Yeah.
Cool?
No, I've definitely noticed over the years with comedians, and you know, I don't know the acting world as much, but even with acting, there's always that, you know, this sort of weird sort of relationship between LA actors and comedians and New York actors and comedians, where it was like,
what do you think that is?
Well, I think a lot of it's fear and pretension, I guess, where a lot of it's coming from. But I think both cities have changed. I think New York has changed more. You know, New York has become much less artistic than it used to be. you know, like I remember like 15 years ago, I would describe the two cities as New York was the city where people were in high school. They're like, I want to be an artist. I want to be different. I'm going to move to New York. And in L.A., they're like, I was voted best looking in high school. I'm going to move to L.A., you know. And you know, there still might be like a touch of that. But, you know, over the years, New York has become such a corporate city, such a finance city. Like I was saying, like almost every person I meet is in finance. They're a corporate lawyer. I hardly ever meet anyone who wants to be an actor or a musician. It's like that's so rare now in New York. It's such a – that's a big change, you know. So when I come to L.A., I meet much more – many more artistic people when I come to L.A. as opposed to New York. And I like that, you know.
When when I used to go back to Seattle, people would complain, which people would say – which is such a cliche, but people would say something like, oh my God, everyone in LA is so fake. How do you deal with it? And I remember feeling like I would never want to engage them because it took too much energy. But in my head, I was thinking, by fake, do they mean plastic surgery? Do they mean like shallowness? Do they mean happiness? And I came to the conclusion that most people haven't really examined what they mean by that. And B, I would much rather have fake and happy than bitter and real.
That's a great analysis. I love to pretend I'm happy than to know that I'm horrible and not enjoying anything. That's hilarious. No, in New York, you definitely have, if I ever read an article about, you know, about dating or, you know, whether it's on Slate or Salon or, you know, whatever, Huffington Post, it's like every article it's all just about, like, strategy and how people, you say this, you say that. Mm-hmm. No one's ever being real, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's almost like people are afraid of that to be real. So they're always putting on.
That's interesting. So you've lived in New York and you've lived in LA.
LA, yeah.
Have you noticed any differences as far as dating culture in both cities?
I find it much easier here. Much easier here to date than New York. I think, you know, I've never been a person who just hooks up with people. I don't know, from everyone that I hear from, that's quite easy in New York, but I've never been into that. So I haven't done that. But, as far as getting like a real relationship, it seems like very hard in New York. And I think also some of it comes from, you know, girls, you know, when I say girls, I mean women, you know, getting hit on much more in New York than L.A.
Because it's so concentrated.
Well, I think it's a mix. It's concentrated and it's, you know, guys being assholes who are just, you know, yelling shit out at women all the time. I know that's not all guys that do that, but there's enough that to put women on guard and to sort of like just, you know, phase out lots of people.
So people in New York, their defenses just generally run high.
They're higher, yeah, definitely. And some of that is just from congestion and how many, you know, people are near you. And then, like, because in L.A., if you're not dating at all, online at all, I don't know how often a woman is going to actually run into a guy, and then he's going to strike up a conversation with her. Because, I mean, that hardly happens anywhere now unless people are at a bar where they know that's what they're going to be doing and they're a little bit drunk, so their guard is down a little bit, you know.
Right.
But, like, if you just start talking to anyone on the street now, you know, their first thought is that you're, you know, some kind of psychopath or creep or something, you know. I mean, people don't even ask anyone for directions anymore. I see people in New York all the time. They'll be on their phone. They're looking at their map. And, you know, just 6 years ago, people would be like, hey, do you know where this is? No,
right.
They don't even ask that now.
Huh.
And if you see someone doing that so many times, you may be like, hey, are you looking for you know, you need help? And they'll just be like, ooh, you know, they just like, get all afraid.
Don't talk to me. I'll figure it on my own.
Yeah, everyone's afraid to talk to anybody.
You're right. That was something really unique when I first was in New York about 10 years ago, that it shocked me that strangers were constantly interacting with each other.
Right. Oh, interesting.
And it was wonderful and scary, but unfamiliar. And now you're right. Like that was something that was very special and unique to me about New York.
Interesting.
Was people's sort of ability to interact with strangers without
a ton
of fear.
I never even looked at it that way, because I remember sometimes when I would be in L.A. And I would be so lonely and miserable. I'd like, well, I'm going to go to the grocery store because at least I can sort of bump into people and talk to the cashier and, you know, maybe, you know, it's like have some kind of human interaction as opposed to just being in your cars, you know. But now everyone, especially with dating, it's like everyone's vetted pretty much. Mm-hmm. You know, you have an app where you get some information about somebody and they get some about you. So there's hardly ever that just – you know,
you can be in the same bar in New York, take out your app, match up with someone in Tinder in the same exact bar, know everything about them, and then you just completely just take all rejection out of the equation.
Yeah.
And you don't have to approach a girl at a bar and say, hey, and strike up a
it's
conversation
like you
anymore.
You don't have to be brave anymore.
You don't have to be.
Yeah, those scenes from the movie, romance movies from the 80s, it's like that stuff doesn't even really happen anymore.
I guess that's we're doing this podcast. It's I get to be brave.
Then again, I know one guy in New York. He's one of these guys that's, you know, getting laid constantly. He's probably with three different women every week. He's picking chicks up on the subway all the time.
Oh, he's not using
how, what do you think he does?
I don't know. I don't know what he does. He's a good-looking guy.
Good-looking.
He's very confident. So I think he's the kind of guy, if a girl wants to hook up with someone, I think he's that guy.
Yeah.
And he knows how to walk and talk it correctly and do whatever it takes to make it – to make it work, you know, but that's happening constantly to him. He'll meet a girl on the street. He'll get some vibe that she's flirting with him, and then he's fucking her 2 hours later. I'm like, how the hell do you do that?
It's happening all the time.
Yeah, that's it, all the time.
I need you to come back and give us more information.
Cool. I will. I'll get some details for you.
Yeah, maybe we should have him on the podcast. We'll call him.
I don't think he would give up any information. He's one of those guys.
No secrets?
No. Yeah, because he doesn't want to blow his cover or anything like that. Yeah. I mean, he's like the worst boyfriend to have, that guy, because he'll have a regular girl who kind of knows the deal, you know, yet he's still doing all this stuff. And then it's just, you know, and then every once in a while blows up in his face.
You know me.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, everyone, like this, like before we met, like, you know this, like...
Yeah, I don't know if he does that, but it's like, and then every once in a while he'll call me up and be like all depressed, he's never going to get married and settle down. I'm like, dude, you're the only one that's fucking stopping you. You know, it's not like you're a guy who can't get laid or can't get a date. You're getting 5 dates a week.
But that's a bigger problem, though. You know, he's just so he doesn't want to settle down.
He's like, woe is me because I'm getting laid. Yeah,
I'm like, you can't be the Fonz forever, man. You gotta chill out.
You know what? Age will catch up to him.
He knows it. He's well aware of it. Yeah, he's still, you know, he's like one of those guys who's like, as long as I can make it happen, he's going to go for it. I think he's like so depressed. He's just like, all right, I'm just going to try to make it happen.
That's odd, because you would think that someone who was getting laid with like beautiful strangers multiple times a week would be pretty darn content.
Yeah. No, he seems like he's always
grass
like,
is always
scared.
Greener, guys.
Yeah.
That's true.
So what are you going to do?
All right, Sim is making us focus now.
We're going to call Jennifer right now.
Jennifer. It's exciting. I'm like,
I know.
I'm excited. Look, this phone ring has got drama to it.
Like, hello.
Jennifer?
Yes?
Hey, it's Sim from Anna Faris' Unqualified, and Anna's here. And
hi, Jennifer.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing well. Sounds like your friend keeps going back to a guy that continues to cheat on her, and you've just about had enough, huh?
Okay, wait, Sim, come on. Now, you were not even making her feel comfortable yet.
Just want to move along.
Hi, Jennifer. I know my sweet producer, Sim, is worried because I've been babbling on all night. But hi, Jennifer. It's Anna, and my dear friend Judah is here.
Hello.
And listen, don't let Sim make you feel uncomfortable.
I won't say another word, I promise, Anna.
But we're really grateful you submitted a question, and we'd love to talk to you and attempt to give you advice that hopefully you won't take because we're not all that qualified.
Well, we'll see what you say.
So tell us what's happening.
So my good friend, who's stunning and beautiful and wonderful in every way, is been seeing this guy on and off for a year. Within the year, she's like caught him red-handed 4 times cheating on him. And each time, like I'm there, like she was across the street from me. So we've gotten really drunk together. I made a pizza and the pepperoni I wrote "fuck him." Excuse me for swearing. Like we've gotten really drunk. taken days off of work, like done everything. And like each time she went back, yada, yada, I just let it go. And now she's back with him again. And like, he's meeting the parents. I've been the really like strict one being like, I'm not hanging out with him. Like, I don't want him around. Like, I don't want to see him. But now I realize that it's like affecting our personal relationship. Like, I'm not seeing her as much anymore. Like, it's a part of her life that I'm not involved in anymore. And I'm wondering, like, how do I deal with, like, stomaching that and still maintaining friendships, not being, like, the rude one or...
Well, first of all, it sounds like you're an amazing friend.
Yeah, and I mean, you should have seen it.
I am.
Jennifer, we were all nodding our heads like we have all been here before. But Judah, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, no.
You go.
No, I was going to say, it's so you don't really talk with her anymore, or it's a much more of a superficial relationship, not as close?
We still talk. We live across the street from each other. So
yeah.
I hear, but well, it's very superficial now. Well, it's like, oh, how was your day?
Yeah, well, I'll say two things. One thing I'll say, it is possible you can still help her. But it also – it might not be. There's something that people talk about like with drug addicts a lot, you know, where it's like you can't – if someone doesn't want to help themselves, you may not be able to actually help them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a movie called A River Runs Through It with Brad Pitt and Craig Sheffer that Robert Redford directed, and that's stories about that. You know, one brother's out of control, always getting in trouble. Then there's the good brother, and the good brother keeps trying to help the brother who's troubled, but he isn't able to help him. And one of the lessons of that story in that movie is that you know, you can show someone love and you can show someone the right way to do something, but that, you know, that doesn't – it's out of your control whether they will actually take that in and accept that. So, you know, so you can try again, and I think it's worth it.
And also there's another issue to acknowledge here, which is something that I've done many times, and which is that if my friend is dating somebody that I'm not crazy about, and in a moment of sort of closeness and vulnerability, I'll express to her, like, I didn't like this thing that he did. I didn't like this thing that he did. And I think I'm just being honest and a good friend, and which that was my intention. And then, meanwhile, a few weeks later, she goes, I find out that they get into an argument and she says something like, well, guess what? My friend Anna doesn't like you. And this is why. And so then the dude is like, well, I, you know what? She's like a jealous bitch or whatever. Like, so then there's this added layer of suddenly your friend without my, you know, if I had thought about it harder, I would never have said those things, because then, you know, but suddenly I'm like pitted. I'm like the enemy towards with a more powerful force.
Right. They've now teamed up against you.
Yes. And it's not that she doesn't like me or doesn't understand the whole thing. It's just that there's a more manipulative force in her arena that is working against me.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that necessarily happened to you, Jennifer, at all, but it is something that has happened to me that I'm guilty of, and it sucks because
you're not guilty of it. It just happened to you. Don't put the guilt in there. I don't think you should put guilt in there. I'm going to fight you on that one.
I mean, there is a chance that your friends maybe, you know, in a moment of vulnerability said, well, you know what, I love Jennifer and I really trust her, and she said that you are not right for me. And then
he knows how I feel about him.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Yeah. It's not hidden.
Yeah. Yeah, those situations are tough. It's like if you see, like, I've seen it before where there's a couple having a verbal fight on the street and it's turning into a physical fight. And then you'll jump in and say something, and the guy who was just about to hit the girl, that girl will now say to that guy, go kick his ass, and then they both start to fight. You know,
they
so
came up against you.
You know, so it's like...
But, you know, here's the thing. If she's a great friend, which I think she is, it's just going to take a little bit of time, but she's going to realize that you are her true friend.
Yeah.
And a love. And she, hopefully, she will, it just might take a little bit of time. It might take about 6 months. And hopefully she'll sort of wise up and leave him.
Yeah.
And then realize that you really loved her and had her best interests at heart.
Yeah. And maybe even approach things factually, like, you know, tell her that, like, if someone shows a pattern of cheating, you're not going to change that. You know, that's a factual thing. It's like, you know, I ask her, it's like, do you want to be in a relationship or you're always going to be cheated on? Because don't think you can change him. It's like, this is the way it is. And I would also maybe try to talk to her, like, and try to empower her with love. Don't try to make her feel bad for making the wrong decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Tell her, you know, you think she's amazing and, you know.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I just had an epiphany.
Go for it.
Okay, it's a risky move, Jennifer. It's a risky move here.
What's the risk?
All right. Well, I'm just saying it's going to require some acting on your part. What if we took a different strategy here and you started telling your friend how much you loved her boyfriend? Like they should get married, that he's awesome, you were wrong before, that he seems like such a great guy. Like,
I'm going to take it
even. Can we Columbo this a little bit?
I'm going to take this on an even different spin. Do that, and then when she's not around, you start flirting with her boyfriend.
Ooh,
and go out with her boyfriend. And then she catches you.
Oh my God.
And then she will definitely break up with that guy. But then you won't ever be friends with her either. But at least she won't be with that guy. So you could take a hit for the team.
Right. That's pretty good. But what if you could plant like a red thong? Like,
ooh, smart idea.
Thank you. In like, his car.
Yeah, like the two of you, you and your friend go shopping for underwear together.
He doesn't drive. He doesn't have a car or a job.
No, but I mean, like, I want to add like an unknown girl to the element.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay, so he
but
doesn't have a job.
Anything, there's nowhere to hide. Doesn't work. And doesn't drive.
Okay, and there's no, like, bunk bed or, like...
See, those are the mystery guys I'm talking about. Guys like that who have nothing going on, yet he's got a steady girlfriend who's amazing, and then he's cheating on her constantly with other women. And he has no job and no car.
And he looks like Ernest Saves Christmas.
Yeah, those guys are like esteem magicians. You know, they're like evil esteem magicians where they just prey on people's esteem and trusts and just. Oh.
Yeah. Oh golly. Oh Jennifer, I'm really worried that you're gonna just have to wait this one out.
Just wait it out. So just try to stomach it and move on.
How do our other friends feel about this whole situation?
Oh, good question, Sam.
Oh, it's a general consensus that she's crazy, and we just don't really understand why.
Yeah, you might just have to
let her
live and learn.
Because she's feeling a little bit alone and defensive right now because her friends don't like her boyfriend. It's maybe even more important now, more than ever, to sort of embrace her and be patient with him, and sort of just sort of be by her side, because the day will come. She'll see it. But right now, the more isolation she has, the more he's able to manipulate her into believing that she's crazy, that she's jealous, her friends are jerks, and like, you know, and he's able to like to really isolate her in a.
Can I say what worked on me when this happened? When the same situation happened to me?
What worked?
Mm-hmm.
And this may not work for her, and this is kind of a bolder play, I think. But what happened with me was when I was dating someone that my friends did not like, my friends shut me out. So all of a sudden I was alone, and then I pretty much dug my own grave. And then luckily they were there to pick up the pieces, and I was like, yeah, you guys were right, absolutely. But you know what? My friends waited it out, and I had to go through it on my own. And I kind of feel like she's going to have to.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah.
But I don't know if you should completely shut her out the way some of my friends shut me out. I wouldn't say they completely shut me out, but it was just that I didn't see them as often, and I knew why.
She didn't like us. She hated us.
If you start dating her boyfriend and then she catches you and you're still friends, then you know you two have a good friendship. Yeah, I don't know what to say there. I don't know.
I think patience and love, if you can.
Yeah, but fight it with love, definitely. Shame her or anything.
She probably
already has a steam issue.
Totally.
So make her feel good, empower her.
And as much as you can, sort of bite your tongue until the timing is exactly right. And just say, if the timing is right, she comes to you, they've been in a horrible fight, say to her, honey, I love you so much. I want to know how he makes you feel. I feel like most of the time, like 70% of the time, you don't feel great about yourself. And that worries me.
What about this? What about the two of you get dressed up, go out together to some place you haven't been before, and try to like pick up some hot guys, and maybe you do it, and maybe that'll get her out of that rung a little.
I like this.
And it'll be like, oh wow, this guy was pretty cool. And
show her that there are other men out there.
Yeah.
Buy her to Hawaii.
Introduced her to other guys, and she.
Oh, so you've tried that? Introduce her to other guys.
Yeah, we've tried it.
He's got a stronghold.
Even like those awful like inspirational quotes I would send her like multiple times a day that you find on the internet, like I've probably tried everything you could.
Okay. Now, does anyone know of like guys here? He's probably, oh gosh, I don't know. I was going to try to say, do we have like, can we, is there like a drug we could slip him so he can no longer,
like a reverse Viagra or something like that. Yeah.
Yes.
We should invent that for guys like this.
I love it that you were right with me with
for
it.
Guys like this, that's what we need to invent. These boner killers.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
We'll get our research team into it.
Yeah, for guys who are like complete pieces of shit. You slip them reverse Viagra.
Yeah. So, because also the thing. It's like, oh, nobody's loved me more in, like, both an emotional and physical way or whatever. And, yeah, so maybe, all right, Judah, we're going to market this.
Or, you know, you can, since he doesn't have a car, pose as an Uber driver and kidnap him and then torture him and tell him you know what's going on and tell him to leave town.
Or... What if we call this dude and we say, hey, I know this is out of the blue, but we really think you should move to Los Angeles. We see a lot of potential in you. You could be a big movie star. I don't know why. You've just got something. We know you're unemployed.
Thing.
We know that you don't drive or anything, but you have something special.
I think she would pay for him to move and probably move with him.
Well,
she's upset.
Oh boy, I think patience is all the only practical advice I can give.
Yeah,
without all of us going to jail.
Or inventing reverse Viagra.
I love that idea, by the way.
We got to do that. We should market that together.
But you know what, Jennifer? Great. The good news is you're a really great friend, and few people are lucky enough to have a great friend like you.
Seriously.
It's true.
And
don't feel bad because it sounds like you're feeling sad. And I hope it's just sad for your friend, not sad for yourself.
She's experiencing a loss.
Yeah, I know. But don't feel like guilty, like, oh, you weren't able to help you or you weren't able to help her. It's like,
right.
I'm not saying you do have blame on yourself, but in case you do, don't do that because you're an amazing friend and you did everything you could.
Don't come to my party. But then not feel rude about not inviting him to my party.
Right.
Or any of the Christmas parties. Really.
Right. Ay, ay, ay. I think,
it's the season.
You know what, though? Here's the thing. I truly believe that rough people, I don't want to say bad or evil people, but people that are troubled will dig their own grave. So if you do invite everyone to your Christmas party, I've got a funny feeling dude man will dig his own grave and you'll be able to be the bigger person while watching it happen.
That's a good point.
Well,
and that way you can like have the power. You're like, I'm the bigger person. I invited everybody. I get to like have a good time, whatever. And I'm 80% sure this dude will dig his own grave because he'll make an ass out of himself in front of everybody.
That's a really good point.
Thanks,
Jennifer. I hope we helped you out here.
You did. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, or for us calling you, and like let's keep in touch. And I really appreciate your honesty, and I hope that I'm as lucky. I want to be lucky in life to have a friend like you.
Yeah, you're awesome.
All right. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Good night.
Bye.
Hi. Hey, Judah.
Hey, Anna.
I can't thank you enough.
I had an amazing time, and this is so much fun.
I'm so glad. Thank you.
And it's like, besides being like fun and funny, it's cool having, you know, real conversations with the people calling in and stuff. You know, it's really cool.
Great at it.
Thanks.
And I love it that you're really open, you're really honest, and I felt like we kind of, I felt like I knew that from the get-go.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, our interactions have been few and far between, they've always been really valuable.
Yeah, I agree. I think this was all, like, just kind of naturally flowing on point, you know. It was cool.
Will you come back?
I would love to come back anytime, please.
Really? And if you aren't in LA, can we call you and can we talk to you about it?
Oh, that'd be great. Okay. That'd be great.
But
yeah.
We're going to get even like more hardcore into your dating life.
Awesome.
If you don't mind.
Awesome. Let's do it.